we may be departing a little bit from the credibility question here, but perhaps in arriving at some answers that we get, we'll get some understanding just as along with it. All right, Jim, you have...
I just want to take an opportunity to disagree with a colleague. Larry, I don't mind that.
I thought I was going to get it again.
No, I suppose in the news media, I'm supposed to be... I'm supposed to have some other economic orientation, perhaps, but it seems to me that anybody who calls on the utility companies, whether it's electricity or gas or telephone or any kind of supplier, to become sort of a poor man's welfare department has only the shakiest concept of free enterprise economics. I really feel very sorry for the poor, and especially the aged poor. With luck, I will get older, and I won't get any more broke, and I will, you know, become one of them. But I don't think that that's a proper role for corporations of any kind to deal with. If the cost accounting is right and the pricing is right, and people can't afford the product, then I think you and I, as the public, ought to make a decision as to whether or not we want to help certain classes of people out. I would think we should be helping the aged poor somehow, perhaps more, but that's a function of welfare and that's a function of Social Security, and I don't think it's a right function of Southern California Edison.
Larry?
Just a brief reply. I don't think it's that difficult, frankly, and to segregate out an easily identifiable section of the community that needs help, and I think that the telephone companies have already experienced this. The lifeline policy of telephone rate structure allows telephone users who have a certain number of units below a minimum threshold to be immune from increases. And I think this policy has worked well, to my understanding. If somebody would like to, from the four, knows better, I would certainly like to be corrected.
I'm told on the Lifeline system that is a direct reflection of cost, and they don't charge below cost, and they make a profit they feel is adequate for that class of service.
All right, and I think that a similar rate structure could be worked out for electrical users, and I think the people who probably would benefit the most would be the elderly, the ones who consume the least.
I believe Tom Harris had a comment.
Maybe I'd better yield at this stage. I think we're getting all of the colleagues here in a grand discussion when we should perhaps have more interchange between the two different interests. It was nothing of real importance anyway.
Frank, I think one of the things I perceive here is that we're trying to discuss in a very logical, objective fashion a very emotionally charged issue. And this is the problem we run across in the media constantly. We can sit here and absolutely firm in our belief in the free enterprise system of use control through pricing and prove conclusively that we should not do this type of social engineering, and it really will have no impact on anyone except ourselves. In the Wisconsin case, which was recently concluded, the inverted rate structure was proposed there by groups including Professor Marchetti of the university. It was thoroughly aired. It is a classic case in economic analysis and showed that the rate structures we now have are very close to true costs. I don't think that will have one bit of effect on the attack on the rate structures that will continue on, because we are dealing with emotional issues. We are not talking about the basic premise of American business, and I think this is the problem we have to deal with. How do we conduct business as we believe it must be conducted and yet deal with the emotional issues at stake?
I do have a comment I'd like to make. It's not in rebuttal or response to anything anyone else has said, more to open up an area I think that we haven't talked about, at least that I have some feelings about. I think there are some either misunderstandings or misinterpretations as to what brings about credibility problems. And I, for my own purpose, and it's all I can speak from, is that my experience with the industry leads me to say this. We've got to all understand that we're trying to do a job that almost can't be done in the first place. You want to communicate to us some of the most complex issues our nation and society has ever faced. And you want to do it incisively, and you want us to, again, echo that back to our readership in the same way that we got it. We have to take extremely technical, sophisticated language, boil it down to what I will call street language, for lack of a more expressive term that the average reader in the street uses, so that he can understand that lingo, and then still keep it in context, so that your lawyers aren't mad, so that your scientific people aren't angry with us. And that's tough to do. That causes a lot of problems. And just because it's difficult and the people haven't already learned it, look, we've only been at this problem for a couple of years. We really haven't got into it yet. And it's going to take time, and there's going to be a lot of anger and a lot of misunderstanding, and there's going to be a long time before we really come to understand what we're trying to grapple with. But I don't think you should get boxed into the defensive position of misunderstanding that as a credibility problem. It's a problem of not understanding your problem. And in the case of opposition, it's not a case of disbelief, it's a case of pure opposition. They know what you're saying. And I think in Maine, they believe what you're saying. They just don't agree with you. They have a different outlook. And I don't know any shortcuts to that problem, but I think public trust and credibility with the electric utility industry, as far as I'm concerned, and I don't see the great credibility problem there. I see one of differing viewpoints and different decisions wanted by certain segments of the public, and to deal with those as credibility problems, I think, would be a very serious mistake. It's just a case of opposing viewpoints, and I've just finished a piece for California Journal, the main point of which is that I've scored environmentalists for, on the one hand, waxing very poetic about the whole need for checks and balances, and they see themselves in this role, but then becoming very grievously harmed when anybody else sits in that same position to their viewpoints. We've got to realize that every position needs a check and a balance, and that opposition to all viewpoints is healthy for us all. It's going to make us unhappy sometimes as we go through the process, but I think we've got to deal with it on that basis.
All right. Other questions or points? And at this time, we'd be happy to entertain questions from the audience. If you would like to raise a question, there are microphones, three of them placed out here. If you would, go to a microphone, identify yourself, address your question to the speaker that you wish to respond to it.
No, I'm a monitor waiting for someone.
Everybody was waiting breathlessly for the question.
Well, if you'll let me start, I'm Bruce Maslin from Baltimore. I'd like to accept Mr. Foy's challenge. I'd like to ask a few questions in that content and then let the whole panel respond. And the first being that power is a lot like inflation. Everybody's against it, but nobody wants to give it up. Nobody wants to give up his raise. Nobody wants to give up his lights, his car, or his job. And in that tense, I'd like to go to Mr. Harris and Mr. Pryor and suggest then since we should adjust rates and since we should look at the welfare people or the elderly poor, I think that each of your papers should give them a complimentary copy every day because they obviously need the benefit of your thoughts. They can't get along without those. And now having done this, I'd like to go to Mr. Myers and Mr. Jenkins and say, how do you feel about your employees responding to this kind of external stimuli the way I have responded to Mr. Foy?
That means I can relax. Well, he started at this end, that we can sort of move down with the flow. I don't think anybody suggested that utility industries give electric power away to anybody for nothing. I think we've suggested that there ought to be a more equitable pricing structure. I, for one, recognize that there is a problem as we come to that it's going to make the product more expensive, as more expensive it's going to become in any case. Never going to see it cheaper than what it is now, unfortunately. If that means, I don't argue that something has to be done to fix a maximum above which people of limited income ability don't have to go. It's just that I don't believe the industry has any place deciding that, mainly because I don't have any say in who I elect to run the board of SoCal Edison or PG&E. I do have something to say about who runs the country, and I think that's a political decision that has to be made by people who are responsive. I think you alluded to something that, people in the media are defensive about and don't often get called about, and it's probably well that you did. When you suggest that we ought to, whether it's giving away free newspapers or something else, I don't know why we should. Nobody believes us anyway. But that's not, I don't want to take your point away. I think it's, we've got to do something. It ill behooves us to criticize obscene profits when ours are almost as obscene as the oil companies. I think we have to get to a more mature situation here. It doesn't involve anybody giving something for nothing unless it's the society as a whole. If we're to rescue the people who are ill-equipped to afford a more sensible or reasonable rate structure, in my view, then that's a societal, a political decision that has to be made, and we ought to get at it.
Larry?
I wasn't suggesting a power giveaway either. I was suggesting that a certain segment of our society, particularly those who are on fixed incomes and Social Security, should be protected from escalating rates. And I just don't think it would be that difficult to accomplish. And I think that utility companies could take a role in trying to see that this is carried out. I think that they should exhibit a social conscience. In relation to newspapers, I think it's a marvelous idea. If I were a publisher, I would ask anybody in our community who had taken the newspaper, say, could prove that they had received the newspaper for a certain number of years, and I would then give them a free circulation, and I would put them in the Golden Circle Club, and I would provide them with a room where they could come in and meet with the editors and take a tour of the plant and make them, if they've been reading our paper for 25 years, I think that they should be shown in the front door.
Otis Chandler is safe.
I'm not sure what would happen if somebody had been an avid reader of the Long Beach Independent and Press-Telegram and happened to move into the stronger circulation area of the L.A. Times. I don't know if they would qualify. They'd be just as old and just as poor.
But we might have some sort of rebates.
I see.
Exchange basis. We can work it out.
You know, let me jump in and say I keep finding myself feeling unnecessarily resentful. But when people say that utilities need to have a social conscience, I worked as a utility engineer for 20 years. We have a social conscience and had one. And I can recall arguments to install duplicate service facilities to hospitals where the tariff did not warrant it. And I can recall my company doing it outside the tariff and finding reasons to do it. I can recall many reasons of social conscience. We did not build the type of service that we have now through lack of social conscience. It was not pure greed. On the other hand, if we're talking about establishing rules for social conscience, which we seem to be doing, pricing structures and this type of thing is not done by an investor-owned utility. We have a device called the Utility Commission, which represents the people. They are the ones to set such rules. If they choose to compensate the poor, the indigent, the media, whoever needs help, then that's fine. And I think this utility industry, and I could use some of that profit, I think the utility industry would not fight that too hard as long as they were justly compensated to their stockholders at a proper and reasonable rate. So I agree with you. I don't think it's a credibility gap. I think we are perfectly happy to perform social functions if properly compensated.
That's a good one.
All right. Do we have another question?
I think you answered that one question that he asked about directed to Mr. Myers.
All right, Ed.
Thank you. It's a fact that we did talk navel to navel to 1 million people in the last 2 years. It's a fact that we point out to people that our social consciousness started with being pioneers in the environmental ethic, first people to worry about air pollution, first people to pioneer in a heck of a lot of areas that are now the thing to do. It's a fact that the residential customers on our system, as in most of the state of California, are paying a lower rate of return, and that's part of that's the profit component, gentlemen, than the industrial customer or the commercial industrial customer. That situation exists already. We have a band of people who are especially trained for this type of activity, and it is our main communications thrust at this time, because I feel, as I said in my presentation, that it's the one way that you can interface and bring out the perception of the people you're talking to. You can't do it in a newspaper advertisement. All you can do is posture there. But when you make a statement and some guy in the audience comes up and says, well, what about this? Then you have a perception that you can answer in a factual manner, and I can assure you our people are trained to do just that.
Bruce, this, I don't believe, answers your question. Pose it again.
Well, I was very happy with the answer from the media, less happy with the answer from the utilities. My answer to you, or to you, Frank, if you would, is how do you feel about your employees, or in this case, me, responding to external stimuli? In other words, not the trained people, not the people that you know what they're going to say, not the people that your lawyers tell what to say, or not the people that the president tells what to say, but every employee of the utility, when they're hit by some external stimuli, I think the best way to communicate, and I believe that was brought up by one of these people, is person to person. The guy you believe the best is your next door neighbor. He may not be the smartest one, and he may not have all the right answers, but at least you usually believe him. And I say, what do you feel about your people and the guy way down on the bottom giving an answer when he gets a question? I realize that in some way he's part of the company, and he may be hung as high, and the company may get some kind of a stigma from an answer that he gives, but if he doesn't say anything, or if you immediately divorce yourself from everything he says, then you lose credibility because they feel you're hiding something if you won't let your own people answer questions. And I want to know what you feel about your people answering any question that comes from any direction.
Well, the answer is hell yes. For years, we have had a campaign in our company that you, the individual employee, are the company. We do have an extensive employee information program that tries to bring the facts as they are available to the general employee population. We have a monthly wrap with the executives that's a session just like this where we put some biggie on the griddle and let the troops go after him. And I believe that we have a great amount of confidence and credibility in our own employee organization and that our employees are indeed our best spokesmen. What I was citing was that in adversary situations, we have to depend upon special training, guys who have been told to go for the throat. You know, most people out here can sit here and say, oh, what an expletive deleted that guy is with his jerky ideas. They're not trained to go for the throat. An employee is a gentleman. And we got a few who aren't. And I hope I'm their leader.
I'm not supposed to get in the interplay of questions and answers here, but Bruce, I'm going to speak to your question. Very definitely, we would tell our employees that you answer every question that you're capable of answering.
Good answer.
Question?
I'm John. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm John Lozes, New Orleans Public Service. I was impressed by one thing that Mr. Foy had mentioned, which I don't think that has been brought up since then, and that is the fact that people who read the media or look at the media are really only impressed by exceptional reporting. I mean by that reporting of the exception, that the, after all, the news is something that is different. And I guess I'm reminded of the story of the captain and the first mate in the ship who were at enmity with one another, and when the first mate went ashore one night, returned to the ship drunk, the captain had this written in the log. The only way the first mate could get even with him was when the captain went ashore the following night and came back stone sober, I mean, absolutely sober. He was sure that the first mate couldn't get anything on him. Well, of course, the first mate had written into the log that the captain returned to the ship sober. Now, the point of this is, Mr. Foy, that, you know, if if, as I understand it, we're trying to explore tonight basically how we can get our message across to the public, if we must couch this in some sort of language of the exception, can you give us any ideas or clue, you know, to the type of information here that we can use in this exceptional type of report?
New Orleans Public Service fails to make obscene profit this year. Don't use that one. That's a great story. I'm going to have to remember that. The kind of message I hope you would carry around with you in your hat somewhere is the idea is simply that you plan everything else you do. You figure out where the best sites will be for your plants and your transmission lines and even meter locations on residences or apartment houses. There's no reason in the world why you shouldn't plan precisely how you're going to communicate good news, bad news, no news, and make it news and make it interesting and challenging and interesting, especially not just to you, but to the people who to whom you want to give that message.
I think John Lowe's point was, how do you make death and destruction out of where you locate a meter, though?
If I really knew all the answers, I'd be working in New Orleans as your consultant for a large amount of money. Obscene profit. Yeah.
All right, Ed Morris.
Yeah, Ed E.W. Morris, retired but still working, and with a lot of experience in the electrical industry. Not ever employed by an electric utility, but close to them. Now, here's the kind of headlines that make news for the electric utility industry. I opened up my Northern California paper Saturday morning, and across the front page at the top, seven columns wide, was an A power plant every 8 miles. And then the first paragraph says, on California's 1,000-mile coastline. And it happens to be a report headlined Santa Monica, and it was published not more than once. I saw it in other papers at the same time, to a lesser degree. But this was the screamer headline across the front of this paper, and I watched. I wrote a letter. Let's see. That was dated October 16th. Of 1972. That's a couple, almost 2 years ago. I wrote a personal letter to that newspaper of something like a page and a half, and took exception to it because the report came out of the RAND Corporation, which, as you know, is a bunch of retired aircraft think tank people over here in Santa Monica who have no business dabbling in the power business, and. There was never a single refutation of this article in that paper, of this it's a reputable Northern California paper. And the only reply that was made to it was finally, after about 30 days, the Pacific Gas and Electric Company had to run a full-page advertisement.
Listen, this isn't true, but it's such a great line, I can't resist throwing it in here. I didn't know there was a reputable Northern California newspaper.
What a zone.
Tom, it wasn't your paper, but you're not going to stand for that, are you?
I'd like to get back to a point that the previous question raised. And I feel I have to respond because I don't think the answer was proper, and I don't think that... the understanding that the audience got from it will be very healthy for us. We're in something of a quandary here, when at least it is for me, when we're talking about the various media aspects, and of course it'll seem defensive if I say I'm really puzzled about the high percentage of credibility of the television media. I guess it's the way the question is asked. For what they do accurately and well, but they don't do nearly anything. Well, that, I mean, look at...
That's why we're so believable.
Right. If you have 15 minutes of news a day, you know, I mean, how can you go wrong when you give each item? You talk about a nuclear power plant siting problem and you give it to us in 38 seconds uncut. Whereas the reporter, and you better believe your public information people, have to strive for an entirely different situation. I want detail, and most other reporters who are specializing in this field do. We've got a much more sophisticated audience than many people are willing to concede, and we better give it to them in excruciating detail. And if they don't like it, that's just too bloody bad. They're going to have to suffer it, and we're going to have to put it to them in some means that will be interesting to read and will be clear enough for, so that they can understand it. For if they don't come to understand the problem, you're never going to solve it. But I don't think that we've got to, we can't shoot for psyching up an exceptional story or making a non-exceptional story an exceptional story. We've got to shoot for a lot of detail and educate people, and that there are no shortcuts to.
Other questions?
Jim Beeler, American Electric Power Service Corporation. I would like to ask the seven men up on the front platform to raise their hands if they heard the session this afternoon on fuels for electric power for the next 10 years. Did anybody hear that? One, two. I was wondering, I was very concerned about what I heard. In other words, it sounds like fiction, really, what I heard this afternoon. And I know it wasn't fiction because the experts were there telling me of what was happening. So I would think that this would be a very good lead article for scare tactics, for Sunday supplements, for science fiction. It could even be used in a cartoon strip of what's going to happen in the world in the next 10 years if something doesn't happen. And it was recorded, and I would hope that all of you people would listen to it just to see what was said. And what was said I think was important, but how does this get communicated to the public if no one was here to listen to it, that communicates to the public? I don't know. Can you tell me how to get this communicated to the public?
I'll volunteer, if I may, on that. brains were never my strong point. Guts were. For one thing, the press was represented. I'm told that George Goetz was in attendance today. George is one of the finest science writers in the country, and he will translate it probably into the language that even television people can understand. and of course, there's a great old line about somebody subpoenaing a television station's records. All I had to do was walk down and buy a copy of that day's newspaper. So we'll wind up hearing something about it. Those people charged with the limited news responsibility will get it probably that way. Others in the television area will wind up probably doing a bit more study and a bit more research on it. I know I will. I've been learning more about fuels for a good long while, and I like to think I'm reasonably conversant about some of the fuel options and some of the fuel problems. And I'm just one guy at one station, and there are half a dozen other people who also consider themselves specialists at our place about certain kinds of things. So the information will get to us. The problem really remains, though, of what the context is for us to take and turn around and give it to the people in some meaningful, interesting, intelligible, and relevant form. That's the problem.
Frank, I'd further like to explain. George Goetz is with the Times, and I'm with the Times. So just to explain the technique of news gathering, our organization is so far flung these days that we are each going out in our separate ways. And quite likely, George will, if he does not write a daily story on this afternoon session, he will pass that material on to me, whether he does or not. He'll pass the material on to me, and because I have specialized in this area as well. And then I'll put it in a manila folder, and I've got a technique now. I've got a system of manila folders, and I watch how fat they get. And when they reach a certain width, then I know it's time to write a what we call a think piece. And I'll take it out and try to amplify it and do an analytical piece. And I will go to RAND Corporation. I will go to Caltech, as well as to industry people. I feel that if we're talking about credibility, if a story is written purely from the point of view of the industry, without some sort of evaluation by people outside of the industry, the public simply won't believe it.
I would like to add one thing, sort of as a non-media man. And I think my problem has been over the years with this type of panel is deciding which expert to pick and which expert to quote. I can think today of a fuel study which is being talked about in most of your societies and by one of the major industry spokesmen, ex-portfolio, which shows that we have no fossil fuel reserves beyond about 30 years and that at the present rate of use, even our coal reserves will be exhausted too soon to be feasibly acceptable.